Next is a marriage of right.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith on behalf of the appellant Kim Wright. With me at council table is Valerie Billison, who's on the briefs. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This case addresses the factors relevant to putting the parties in roughly equal financial positions when you have a very high income earner, a very large community estate, and the high income earner is near retirement. The trial court here recognized that Dr. Wright would retire in 2.5 years. That's finding of fact 12. It nevertheless awarded 3 years of maintenance, a total of $1 million at $30,000 a month, and in addition provided a significantly disproportionate division of property, essentially awarding all of the cash and retirement accounts that these parties had established together to the wife, and leaving Dr. Wright to his own devices in the next few years to continue to pull the plow and try to make up the difference, essentially providing him with very little of the community assets that these parties had acquired over a long-term marriage.
The effective 60-40 split, heavy on liquid assets to the wife.
Extremely heavy.
Explained by your opponent as, well, those are the assets he asked for. He asked for the Alaska assets, the planes, the real estate, the business interests in Alaska. When we got to the magic number, all that was left there to give to the wife were liquid assets.
Well, he asked for the Alaska assets. He did not ask for a $1.7 million cash distribution that could only come from his separate income when there were essentially no cash assets left to him. And the trial court truly in this case engaged in a double dip because it not only provided a disproportionate division of property, but knowing and in fact making a finding that Dr. Wright would be retiring within 2.5 years and pose this really significant maintenance obligation when, in fact, the case law suggests that if you have a disproportionate division for the economically disadvantaged spouse, you may be able to forego maintenance. And this is a circumstance under which the court should have either done one or the other, but it was not appropriate to do both, because the consequence of that was to leave Dr. Wright with essentially no ability, with his separate income, to create a significant retirement accounts for himself.
The court's determination, projection of income for those 2.5 years is a factual question, isn't it?
That's a good question. It's true with regard to both this type of predictive ability. It's factual to the sense that the court is making a determination of what they think is going to happen, but it's also predictive. Now, the response to that might be, well, you could go in and get maintenance modified, and we may have to do that because, as we've set out in our financial declaration, in fact, the trial court guessed wrong in this case. It's not a matter of fact. You can go back and look and see this is how much Dr. Wright made in 2010, 2011, 2012. You can't, as a matter of fact, say what he's going to make over the next 3 years. And when you create a maintenance award that is intended to supposedly put the parties in roughly equal positions, and you do so based on something that your prediction is wrong, that's the reason that you either should be looking at a disproportionate division of property or an award of maintenance. Now, these parties, and I'll get to the issue about characterization, because, in fact, we think there was also a legal error made here in terms of characterization because of the way in which assets that were acquired in Alaska after the parties had actually physically separated was awarded. That was a significant portion of the award that was made to Dr. Wright.
On that issue, on the $1 million of the tangible value of the business, the ANA business in Anchorage, substantially all accounts receivable, records undisputed, all the accounts receivable came in after the filing of the dissolution action, hence that would support separate property.
Yes.
But what about Exhibit 359, the worksheet that identifies it as community, and what about the closing where the court says, now, please identify for me again all the separate property, and are you sure that's all the separate property, and the value of the business doesn't come up?
Well, I think that there was a I think we've certainly articulated, I hope we've articulated this issue better on appeal than it was at the trial court level. But Dr. Wright took the position consistently at trial that the business should not be valued and it should not go into the mix in making a determination of what the assets available to the court were. And that would have included these receivables. There was also this separate issue as to whether goodwill should be valued given the fact that he'd been an employee when he worked in Washington State and that Alaska does not recognize goodwill. But certainly, it's
but
undisputed.
The trial court for saying you got it wrong on this is separate property when, in fact, is teed up for him all the way through as being acknowledged as community property.
I believe this is an error that the court should have recognized. And I also believe that it should have recognized that analysis was being undertaken with the idea that the community property should be equally divided. Mm-hmm. This was an estate that was at a maximum $17 million. It was Dr. Wright's position that it was actually closer to a $14 million estate with regard to the party's community property. That should have been divided equally, and that would have been enough. Mm-hmm. And not doing that meant that Dr. Wright did not get any of the benefit of his separate income or property.
And that then supports your argument that you're making that as a matter of law, because the wife could be amply provided for with the community property, the court erred in invading the separate property.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. That is our position. And in fact, if you look at the award of maintenance in this case, the reasons that are given for these awards are either subsumed in the disproportionate division of property or don't make any sense. The court says, well, you know, you're going to be able to make this up, and yet he makes a finding that Dr. Wright's going to be retired in 2.5 years. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Shelby Limmel of Masters Law Group on behalf of the respondent. If I could first address retirement and liquidity, at finding of fact 12, Judge Downing actually does not make a finding that Dr. Wright is going to retire. What he says is that Dr. Wright will work to capacity for another 2.5 years. Capacity meaning that he will continue to earn $4 million a year for 2.5 years, $10 million. Now, to say that that means he is not going to work isn't in the finding and would be inconsistent with Dr. Wright's declarations at Exhibit 26 and 29, in which he explains to the court the purchase of a $4.3 million property in Alaska, the purpose of which is to open a pain clinic at which he will practice and produce an income when he no longer practices as a surgeon. There is no evidence or finding that he will retire. Rather, the evidence is that he will continue to work even when he can no longer work as a surgeon, at which point he will produce a very significant income for himself after the maintenance term is over that will be his and his entirely.
But basically you're saying that these are all determinations within the trial court's discretion because they're fact-based.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to simply point out that the facts support that he will continue to work, contrary to his assertion that he will retire. Taking the liquidity question, Judge Verlin, you hit the nail on the head. He purchased $10 million worth of assets using community property in the last couple years of the marriage. He was awarded those assets because he asked for them. And then he complains, well, I got what I asked for, but I didn't get enough cash, and so the 60-40 distribution isn't fair. That analysis omits $900,000 in separate cash that he was awarded at Exhibits 332 and 333.
So is it your position then that because of the assets that he wanted, that undermines the argument that the community assets were amply available and the court erred in invading separate property?
Any maintenance award or equalizing judgment will invade separate property to the extent that it's earned after the marriage.
But is that, I mean, did the court have to do that because of the decision that was made and the insistence on having the non-liquid assets?
I don't know that the court had to, but he did to reach equity in this case. And that, of course, is the limitation on a maintenance award, is justice and equity, not need, as is being offered to this court. Maintenance was inappropriate. It was an abuse of discretion because she didn't need it, because it's a high asset case. That's a pre-1973 analysis of maintenance. You know, as this court is well aware and as our Supreme Court has repeatedly stated, the only limitation on a maintenance award is that it does justice by the parties. And as this court has recently stated, one governing inquiry into that analysis is whether the parties are put in roughly equal financial circumstances.
Are you relying on Kozin at all?
Yeah, absolutely. In overruling, there's 1973 cases which looked at need versus ability to pay, which are now two of seven factors the court looks at.
How do we test the allegation that there's been a double dip, that somebody's looked at the economic circumstances and dividing property under the statute and also looked at the criteria for maintenance and has loaded it up looking at the same factors in two situations so that it is an inappropriate double dip? What's the standard to measure that with?
This is the first time I've actually heard the term double dip to explain what the court did here. The maintenance award doesn't have anything to do with the property, and of course the case law provides that maintenance awards and property distributions are taken in conjunction with one another. The maintenance is a straightforward attempt to deal with the fact that Dr. Wright will continue to earn $10 million in 2.5 years after the dissolution and that my client will not have any earnings. So I don't understand how a double dip occurred there. It has nothing to do with the property distribution. It has to do with adjusting for his income. Now, he has argued that it's an unfair and untenable award because he can't catch up. I am unaware of any math or tax consequences by which that is accurate. He will pay $1 million in maintenance. He also has a $1.7 million equalizing judgment. With interest, that comes to just under $3 million. In that time frame in which those payments are due, he will earn 10. And he also has $900,000 in cash, nearly $8 million more than he will pay my client. Now, I have not seen anything in the briefing or heard anything in the argument, nor am I aware of any tax implications that can take $8 million and reduce it so significantly that he doesn't come out very far ahead of the position that my client was put in. Further, I go back to the finding of fact 12, that does not suggest that he won't continue to work and have a very significant income for himself. I do have to say briefly about the financial declaration, which was relied upon in the opening comments. That declaration is a completely inappropriate attempt to put new evidence before this court, which of course was not subject to cross-examination or to any discovery. And it is not appropriate in terms of addressing the maintenance or the equity done by the trial court in this situation.
It would be pertinent to attorney's fees, though.
It is pertinent to attorney fees, but someone who acknowledges a net income of $76,000 a month and spends $5,000 a month on personal airplanes, $7,000 on travel, and $2,000 on clothing and gifts has not established a need. Further, the fee question really goes back to liquidity. He argues that he needs his fees paid because he wasn't awarded liquid assets, when in fact he was awarded $1.2 million in cash, $320,000 more than my client received in cash in the trial court's award. Could turn briefly to the question on the accounts receivable. Again, absolutely correct in that this argument was waived in Exhibit 359 when the accounts receivable are identified as a community asset by Dr. Wright. Again, in the closing, when he lists separate property, fails to list this asset or claim that it's separate. In fact, nowhere does he ask the trial court to say that the accounts receivable are separate. Now, his testimony on this point at Report of Proceeding 611 does not address the character of the property. What he says is that it takes me approximately 4 to 5 months to collect a fee. And he apparently would have this court say that the trial court should have worked backward from that testimony, although he was never asked to do so, should have heard that testimony and worked backward and said, okay, so 4 to 5 months from your receipt, that fee was earned. The problem is he never testifies about 4 to 5 months from when, from the provision of services, from the bill to a client, from the bill to an insurance company. There's no inference from that testimony that would allow the court to make any conclusion about the character of the asset. If turning briefly to the issue of Alaska law, the difference between Alaska law and Washington law in this question is that Alaska does not allow for any distribution of goodwill, and Washington does. The policy underlying Alaska law is that they do not want to restrict economic liberty by including goodwill in a division of property. The total goodwill in this case was $366,000. Given the distribution, the value of that to Dr. Wright is about $220,000. He earns in 1 month 1.5 times that amount. it's difficult to conceive of an argument that his economic liberty is restricted by earning a fraction, or including a fraction of his monthly income in the property award. Judge Downing correctly concluded that my client was entitled to the benefit of protection of Washington law, the vast majority of this marriage having taken place in Washington.
Dr. Wright argues that under the conflicts analysis under Section 6, the restatement, if you look at the financial expectations, there really wasn't a genuine financial expectation about goodwill being generated in his eat-what-you-kill type partnership in Alaska.
Yeah, as I understand that argument, what he's saying is that the parties anticipated that he would work at Alaska Native, where he didn't have goodwill. The goodwill is from ANA. And in fact, he acknowledges that he always intended to open ANA. He was in talks with his partner, Dr. Jensen, in Washington before moving to Alaska and opened the practice about 2 weeks after arriving in Alaska. So there was certainly an expectation that he would open that business, which generated the goodwill. He doesn't challenge the finding that there is goodwill. He challenges the inclusion of that asset in the distribution. I think that's adequately supported by the duration of the marriage, the vast majority of which existed in Washington, but also the court's correct conclusion that Alaska's policy underlying this difference in the law simply doesn't come into play in this case. Unless the court has any further questions, I suppose I should anticipate the argument on the marriage. Dr. Wright at first claimed that the marriage was defunct when he moved to Alaska and appears to have abandoned that argument in the brief and is now focusing on the point at which he told his family of his extramarital affair. Exhibit 18, he reads a letter to his children explaining what has occurred. That letter does not say that the parties are divorcing. It in fact says that he will continue to provide for his children and to my client to the best of his ability. My client unequivocally states that when she heard this news, she was shocked and overwhelmed, that she made no immediate decisions about divorce, and that it was a long, painful process to ultimately come to the conclusion that the marriage was defunct. There is a presumption in her favor that this marriage was intact until papers were filed. If I could just briefly, Your Honor, wrap up, this court's case in Aetna controls that the birth of a child outside of a marriage and an extramarital affair in no way suggests that a marriage is defunct. Thank you.
Thank you. Four minutes.
Thank you. Let me talk briefly first about maintenance and what's important. Now, you've heard here a sort of inconsistent argument that they're not connected, and yet they are. But in fact, we know that in fact that property division and maintenance are clearly connected to one another. And the Wright case in particular suggests that with a disproportionate division of property, and of course Judge Downing got right to the edge of what people think they can justify in these cases with a 60-40 split, that maintenance is not necessary. And in fact, this was a case given the significant amount of property that these parties had available to them, the fact that all of the cash went to the wife. This was a case in which you could not justify a significant maintenance award and a disproportionate division of property with the same set of facts. The Wright case makes that clear, and this court should make it clear again in this case. There was no need for rehabilitative maintenance. There was no suggestion that Mrs. Wright was ever going to have to work. She hadn't worked. She wasn't going to work. There was no reason for her to have rehabilitative maintenance. The standard of living that she is being provided, now the court was justified its award in part on the fact that she was going to be maintaining this very large house on Mercer Island for the benefit of the party's adult children, and we would submit that that was an inappropriate grounds, and that even if it was appropriate, the court should have looked at the fact that it was leaving this woman with $1.7 million in immediately available cash, leaving aside the equalizing judgment, in order to, if it was her decision to continue to live in this house that had these significant costs, that she had the ability to do that without requiring Dr. Wright to continue to pay maintenance at a level that, on a predictive basis, could not be sustained. And I'd like to point out, finding of fact 12 says that Dr. Wright will continue to make $4 million a year for purposes of child support. But in fact, Judge Downing recognized that he was at the end of his career, and this award of both disproportionate division of property and this extraordinary maintenance award that was far more than Mrs. Wright needed. And I used need not in the sense that, you know, she should be shopping at Trader Joe's instead of at Whole Foods, but in the sense that her needs, given the family's lifestyle, were more than adequately met by this. And the argument that we're getting instead is that Dr. Wright shouldn't be flying his airplanes with his significant income. That's the argument that's being made here, that he's not entitled to the benefit of his separate income after these parties are divorced. And given the limited amount of time that he has available to him to provide for his new family, given his age, given the significant assets that were acquired as a result of his efforts on behalf of this community, and the fact that Mrs. Wright got by far the lion's share of those, the award of both maintenance under these circumstances and of this disproportionate division of property was improper. And we would ask the court to reverse, and on the basis of the significant difference between these parties' assets and the income that is available to Dr. Wright, and the fact that he is now operating at a deficit, that his fees be awarded on appeal. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll discuss home in further detail in the next case. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is marriage of Larson.